This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabond. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Great, Naz. It's Masters Sunday. I call it the first day of spring. Joining us from Augusta in the bottom end of the hour is Masters.com's John Steinbrenner. But joining us now from Augusta, I call him the preeminent Canadian sports broadcaster of this generation, TSN's James Duthie. Good morning, James. Thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm great, and a pleasure to be here, guys. We've been, trying to make this happen since the World Cup. So I'm glad we could finally figure it out.
We finally figured it out, and it could be no more special Sunday for us passionate golfers than Masters Sunday. And thanks so much for joining us. First question I've got to ask you, I'm actually watching the Masters on my little iPhone while I'm talking to you, and I notice Brooks and John are two strokes away from each other. But what's the weather like this morning? It looks a little bit chilly down there, James.
Yeah, it's cold, but the good thing is that rain, which plagued this entire week, is long gone. There's 0% basically in the forecast. It's getting a little bit brighter. I mean, it's cloudy right now, but it's getting brighter as the day goes on. It's getting warmer as the day goes on. By when they're coming down the back nine later this afternoon, 4 or 5 o'clock, it'll be your typical sunny Masters finish. They always, no matter what the weather is during the week, they always seem to get that, you know, gorgeous last couple of hours. So let's hope those two guys or somebody else can get in the mix or are dueling down the stretch.
I'll turn over my co-host, Naz. Naz, chime in.
Are you surprised at the play of Phil Mickelson and he's outplaying Tiger Woods right now?
Yes, I mean, Tiger withdrew this morning, and I don't think that's a big surprise to anybody who watched him yesterday at the end there. He could barely walk. But I think 100%, Naz, I did not see this from Phil. I don't see how anyone could have seen this from Phil. He's one of eight players that doesn't have a single point on the LIV Tour. He's been terrible on the LIV Tour. His ranking's fallen to 355th in the world. There has been nothing in the last year to 18 months that would suggest that he could do this. Now, I think he was probably a good pick late in some people's Masters pools because there's something about this place with Phil that, you know, it can wake something up in him, and it clearly has this week. We'll see if he can hang around today for these last 28 holes or whatever, but I didn't have him at all. I didn't see this coming whatsoever. Sometimes I think, you know, he's the one thing that's striking in person. I'm sure you can see it on TV. Like, he looks really skinny. Almost too, you know, unhealthy skinny. And sometimes I think when guys, you know, maybe they don't have the best bodies, but golf's the one place where if the body's comfortable for you, it works. And, you know, Phil did most of his winning with a little bit of a punch, and now he's lost all this weight, and I thought that might have messed him up. But it's, you know, it's nice to see. I'm always one for mayhem at the Masters. The LIV guys might not be my favorite players, but I think it's fascinating when they get involved. And when Phil's involved, at least at Augusta, I think it makes it all the more interesting.
James, talking about LIV, how much of this LIV PGA Tour controversy is it seems to not bubble to the surface at all
right
this week. Is it a storyline down there at all? Are people talking about it?
I think it fizzled somewhat from what people anticipated. Just in the sense of, if anybody was expecting some sort of trash talk, that just doesn't happen in golf, and certainly doesn't happen at the Masters, where all of the players, I think, hold this place in such high esteem that they just wouldn't do that. So they're downplaying everything. Now, you know, if it's Koepka and Rahm battling Sunday afternoon, then that is certainly part of the story. I think a victory by a LIV player would mean a ton for that tour, even though it's, you know, I don't know why it gets, we all knew that Koepka was a good player when healthy, but I do think that would be a massive for the LIV tour to get that victory. So I think it'll play out a little bit. You know, most people will probably be rooting for Rahm against Koepka. Sort of good guy, bad guy thing, even though that's not really the case. But we like our narratives, and I think that'll just in Italy, it was funny in talking to, I was out for dinner last night with about 20 people are down here for the first time, and they were all rooting so hard against Koepka, it actually caught me off guard. So I think the masses are definitely sort of anti-LIV when it comes out there, but it won't be vocalized. Nobody's going to boo anybody or anything like that here.
Naz?
The seems to have a wrestling team, the NWO against the WWF. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, but like I said, it's a good story, right? If that's the case. And when you're covering this event, I always cheer for the best stories, and that would be a great story.
James, I've always considered you one of the preeminent Canadian sports broadcasters of this generation, and we wish you had you for more time today, but we know we've got to get you back to work. But I've got to, I always ask this question when I get somebody of your stature on the show. You've been in broadcasting in Canada for a while. You've covered some of the most significant sporting events of our generation, the World Cup, the 2010 Olympics, and so many, many more. When did you realize you were going to be a sports broadcaster? Who was the biggest influence in your career?
Oh, that's a great question. I think, guys, that most sports broadcasters are failed athletes. I had this vision that I would be an NFL football player, and then when that died, I was going to play in the CFL, and then I realized I was a 5'10", 150-pound cornerback at the end of high school, so that probably wasn't going to happen, and I thought this was the next best bet. It's funny, I don't know that there was one. You know, I watched Dave Hodge on Hockey Night in Canada, and Bob Costas in the States growing up, but I'm not sure that there was one guy I idolized. I just knew that I had to do something in sports because it was kind of my obsession. And when I went to journalism at Carleton and ended up being a news reporter for a bunch of years, but in the back of my mind, I always wanted to get back into sports. And I've been incredibly lucky to do some of those things that you mentioned. And still, the Masters is a perfect example. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year, every year. And we do a lot of work. It's long days, but man, there's no place I'd rather be. It's such a privilege to be here.
I just want to follow up quickly, Naz, and I'll give it back to you. The Masters, Augusta. I'm sure you probably remember the very first time you were there. It's considered golf's hallowed ground. What's so special about it? I know it's. I haven't had the privilege of getting there yet. I got pretty close this year. What's so special about it, James?
So, I would describe it this way, and I'm not sure if it answers your question properly. There's so many places in the world, you know, that you go to and they're a disappointment, whether you see the pictures on television or on Instagram or something, and it never lives up to maybe what you thought. And the Masters is the one place that actually exceeds, you know, it's actually prettier than you even see on television. You arrive there and there's not a piece of pine straw out of place anywhere on the golf course. It's just the most immaculate. It's almost like you've walked into a different world. And, you know, some of the things they do, they don't allow cell phones on the golf course. There's no electronic scoreboards, which sounds crazy in 2023 and makes it a little bit harder for me to do my job. But it's great. You know, there's no, you'll watch today and there's not a bunch of people holding up their cell phones behind every single tee shot like we see at every other golf event now. And you do feel like a little bit like you've walked back, I don't know, into the 1930s or 40s. They keep sandwiches and beer at $2 or $2.50 each. And it's just a really incredible place where every view you have of every hole, 12 is prettier than it is on TV, and that 15, 16 is. And it's hard really to describe. That's supposed to be my job, is to be able to describe things in words. Mm. And I have trouble with the Masters, and hopefully you do get to get here someday, because there's not very many people that have been here that haven't, I think, felt the same way I do.
Naz, quickly.
Do you think the Leafs finally get past the first round, James?
Boy, we just did the 180 hard, eh? You know, I thought they would last year, so I'm not the best predictor of these things, guys. I do think so this year. I think there just comes a point at some point you get sick of losing and you find a way to get it done. It's a bad draw to be in that division with Tampa and Boston. And even if they do get through, you get the euphoria of a first round win, and then you probably get the Boston Bruins unless they get upset. So that's a tough road ahead. But I do think the only great wild card again is goaltending. If Vasilevsky becomes Vasilevsky, that's a bit of a mismatch, as good as Samsonov has been for most of the year. So that would be the one thing I'd be the most worried about. But I do think they're going to do it if I'd have to make a prediction. Now, Tampa's played a lot of hockey the last 5 years, and I think at some point it has to catch up on you.
We've been talking to James Duthie. James, we promised you we wouldn't go overtime. We might be going overtime 30 seconds. So
it's all good. All good, guys. I owed you this after, I think, two or three times I had to cancel. So yeah, we'll do it again.
We'll do it again, but I'll
stay on longer.
I just want to finish off with this. For our listeners who haven't seen the vignette on TSN, Bad for Bedard, if you haven't seen it, you'll realize, James, I think you missed your calling in life. You should have been a rock star.
I don't know about that.
It was incredible. I enjoyed it. I watched it again this morning. I laughed like crazy again. And honestly, I think McKenzie stole the whole
he
show
always does.
On the cowbell. Okay,
he always does. No, thank you. That was, it's my sort of motto in life is it's only sports, right?
Absolutely.
We come to sports for an escape, and that was definitely an escape.
It was a lot of fun, and congrats to you guys. You guys are wonderful characters. We'll let you go, James. I know this is a work day. We don't want to take advantage. You got a lot of work from now to the end of the day. We wish you a fantastic Sunday, and thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you, boys. I appreciate you having me on. Take care.
James Duthie, TSN. On that note, we're going to take it to break. And coming back, the Ultimate Leafs fan and Lou Franceschetti, and we're going to catch up with the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville asked, do you want to meet the hot Hawaiian of your dreams? This hot Hawaiian is slathered in bacon, red onion, spicy sausage, pineapple, and hot banana peppers. A large thin crust is just $16.99. One bite and you'll say, wow! You might even get a lay on the beach. Call Pizzaville at #3636 on your cell phone.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740, also downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM, and live video and audio streaming at www.zoomerradio.ca. We're bringing into the show now the Ultimate Leafs fan, Mike Wilson. Mike, good morning, and haven't had an opportunity yet. We had to get right into it with James Duthie, but I want to take this opportunity to wish you a happy Easter, and to all our listeners, we haven't had that opportunity yet either. To all our listeners, happy Easter, happy Passover. Mike, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Thanks for having me, and welcome, and happy Easter to all you guys as well.
Also joining us at this point in the show, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Happy Easter, Lou. How are you this morning?
Buona Pasqua a tutti. Very good, thank you.
Thanks, Lou. And, of course, Naz, I didn't get you an opportunity to wish you and your family a happy Easter, and I'll take that opportunity now. To you,
thanks,
and Mary,
you
and Mary Lane and your boys and your granddaughter, a happy Easter to you and your family.
Thanks very much, Wally.
My pleasure. Gentlemen, okay, Leafs. We destroyed the hated Habs last night, although, you know, the game really didn't mean much. But, well, we'll take a 7-1 pounding of the Habs anytime, won't we, Naz?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime is right. I love the power play with O'Reilly now. Beautiful.
Yeah, he's just back. I think, you know, they had a pretty good game against Boston this week. Mike, I want to get you involved. Your sense of where the Leafs are right now, I would say call them a bunch of meaningless games this week, although they're not meaningless in this sense. They may be meaningless from a standings point of view, but, you know, Sheldon Keefe now has an ability to hone in on exactly how he wants to shape the team for the opening whistle against Tampa. I'm not so sure the NHL's come down with the actual date, but it's the next week. What do you expect to see from the Leafs this week? And from what you've seen this week, what's your sense right now, Mike?
Well, what you don't want. I mean, you're glad you don't have to play any more stiff teams like that last night. That's an American Hockey League team, because that just develops bad habits and complacency. And you want to ramp up moving into the playoffs, and I think this will give them time to adjust some of the lines. And, of course, Monday's night against Florida is critical for them, so they're going to have their hands full. And Tuesday night in Tampa will set the bar, and they always have entertaining games. And the Rangers, of course, are still trying to adjust themselves as well, too. So those three games will be good tests for them, I think, and set them up into next week moving into the first round of the playoffs. But, again, we're glad that when they got rid of these bad games, because, you know, I hate playing those type of games that they saw last night.
Lou, you're batting cleanup here today, so we'll throw you a little bit of a curveball here. Actually, aside from the Leafs pounding of the Habs last night, one of the stories was, you know, the Leaf, I guess Leaf capologist, I think is, I can't remember his name right now. Mike, you might help me out at some point.
Right, but home.
They decided last night they were not going to dress Joseph Woll the backup, and they were going to sign this. I don't know if he's a kid, a U of T student, U of T goalie Jet Alexander. They signed him to a contract 2 hours before the game. So Leafs got a little bit of cap relief. Samsonov played most of the game, but they decided to bring Alexander into the game with a minute left, which for most of us, we thought that was a great gesture. You know, gave this kid, he can now brag to his grandkids that he played in the NHL, and is going to be a picture of him in a Toronto Maple Leaf uniform that's going to be carried for generations in his family. And, you know, it warmed a lot of people's hearts. But it didn't warm the heart of Chris Weidman of the Montreal Canadiens, who felt that was a disrespectful move made by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Lou, I want to take it as a perspective of a player. You know, playing in the NHL is not easy. You got to fight it and grind it, and you're on an opposing team, and the other team pull does that. I didn't have a problem with it personally, but what's your response as an opposing player? Some people felt that was disrespecting the Montreal Canadiens.
I don't really think so. You know, they were in a tough situation. I think any organization that's going to bring up a goalie that's a rental goalie, I guess they didn't find a Zamboni driver last night to put in as a backup. But you know, at the end of the day, the Leafs did a great thing to the kid. They didn't want to just bring him up and then have him sit on the bench. The game got out of hand. And I think even if it was a 5-1 game, or they probably would have brought him in just to avoid any shenanigans that maybe the Canadians would have had on accidentally running into the goalie, so to speak. So I thought it was a great gesture. Chris Weidman can take that to the golf course on Wednesday or Thursday or Saturday of next week and think about whatever he wants to think about. But it, on my behalf, I thought it was a great gesture just for the kid itself, that you get a chance to dress in a Leaf uniform and actually play in 30 seconds to a minute.
Mike, I want to run this one by you, and Naz, I'll get you in on it as well. Aside from the kid, nobody's got no issues with the kid. He got his 15 minutes of fame, and God bless him, and he's got a story to tell his grandkids and his great-grandkids. I don't have any issue with it. But some of the commentators have suggested that the NHL should have a rule in place about this. It's one thing if the goalie's legitimately injured, you bring him in as a third goalie. You don't dress him as the second goalie. It just seems to me in professional sports at a league that the NHL is at, that you really shouldn't you be dressing people who can actually play in the NHL? You know, I get the part where if somebody's injured, you got to bring somebody in from the stands. You can't dress five goalies. I understand that. But to deliberately dress a player who does not have the capability of playing in the NHL, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, first off, go back to the old six-team leagues when there used to be one goalie. They'd have the guy sitting in the stands, and he'd have to go and get dressed if the player got hurt. So, I think that the three-goalie system, because you have that, it should be allowed. But the problem is teams will find ways to get through it and take advantage of it. So, I mean, the two-goalie system now, I'm fine with it. And if you have a third goalie, how often does that happen? And everybody should remember, too, by the way, that last night, remember, just because you're listed on the roster doesn't mean you get actually credit for playing in the game. So you have to step on the ice before you're credited with an actual official NHL game. So that's why they put that kid in the last minute, so you have credit for one full game. But getting back to your point, I don't see a problem with that. And if you dress the third goalie, especially if it's one of your minor league teams, because most of these teams now, National Hockey League, all their minor league affiliates are in the same city or close by. It's easy to bring a guy in and have him sit in the stands to be the backup. And, there probably should be something for that.
I think, Naz, I'll turn over to you. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that it shouldn't happen, but it's there, right? We almost had Curtis Joseph. I think that would have gotten a bigger ovation than last night if you were able to play.
I just think, obviously, when you only have two goalies, there's a possibility of two goalies getting injured in a game. That's possible. You got to bring the guy up from up top, and that's fine. But this was done deliberately. You had Joseph Woll, who should have been your backup goalie last night. And I don't blame the Toronto Maple Leafs for, you got some bright guys in the back office who said, we got to get this Matthew Knees into the lineup somehow.
Matt Murray into the lineup, too, remember.
Right? I call this a loophole.
They have to get around the cap.
Yeah.
That's why they're doing it's in the rules.
I'm not so sure it's deliberately in the rules. I think this is something that's going to get plugged in the next collective bargaining agreement. I think you got a lot of, just like the Income Tax Act, the feds changed the chain, and then you got these clever lawyers and accountants find ways around it, and then they plug them. This one's going to get plugged in the next agreement. I don't have any doubts. But I'll give the Maple Leaf team credit. I mean, it's within the rules, no question. But it just, there's something about it that rubs me the wrong way when you're deliberately dressing somebody who does not have the capability of playing in the NHL, not even close.
But what's worse, Wally, if you're going to do that, you're opening up a whole can of worms. What about Tampa a couple of years ago when they had $16 million
same
of
thing.
Cap space sitting in that?
You sat. What was his? What's their big star down there?
Right, because once the playoffs start, there's no cap, so you can bring everybody. You can sit guys out. Like they could bring Jake Muzzin back and have no cap hit.
Yeah.
So If you're going to go for one, you're going to open up a can of worms.
Well, I think this collective bargaining agreement's been around for a while now, and they have the NHLPA's got a new they've got a new director, and it'd be interesting to see the rules that they plug up in the next one, because these clever capologists and these clever clever general managers have figured out a way to play all these things about buying contracts with people who are on long-term reserve. You know, you're selling, you know, guys who haven't played in 5 years. I mean, some of these things get ridiculous. Anyways, let's move off from that. Mike, since I've got you here, this kid that played last night for the Minnesota, I think it's the Minnesota Gophers, they lost in overtime in the Frozen Four. My understanding is he may be signing a contract this week. What Matthew Nies is, I think, the name. Have you seen him play, and what does he look like?
Well, I haven't seen him play, but, I mean, I heard of him from last year in training camp. But, I mean, people should lower their expectations. This kid's a college hockey league player, and as you know, the step up in the National Hockey League, especially in the playoffs, is huge. And I mean, if they get him into a game at the end of the week, maybe. But, you know, they can't expect him to come and play in the playoffs. The Leafs have got a set lineup. They've built this team to move into the playoffs, and you don't want to send any disruption. So I wouldn't expect to see him at all.
Naz, O'Reilly, we still haven't figured out. Well, I guess we'll find out this week where he's going to be playing in the playoffs. He could either be a second-line winger or a third-line center. Based on his performances, he looks like he's going to be an incredibly positive addition come playoff time. Seems to have a playoff type of game. And the Leafs played a playoff type of game against Boston the other night. And Samsonov seems to be the clear-cut guy. There's no question now. He's going to be the guy between the pipes game one. You're looking at Leafs for another week here. Come game one, what are your thoughts, Ness?
I think the Leafs are going to use him in the top six. It only makes sense, and it makes Tavares stronger, too, when the two guys are playing together. So I see it in the top six. You're in the playoffs now. It's best on best, so put your top six in there and go. Now, I want to ask a question to Louis. Is Wayne Simmonds going to be in the lineup anytime?
Yeah, better not be.
What are you smoking?
Oh, come on, guys. Yeah. Answer the question, Lou.
Of course he's not going to be in the lineup. I don't care who they play right now. You got Matthew Nyes coming up. You got the kids that have done really well this year. I really don't think, unless they get really desperate and somebody's really running roughshod over the Leaf players. They've answered that question by bringing in Shen, McCabe, Arturi, and Lafferty. That they don't need any more toughness or physical presence. Anything that Tampa's going to dish out, I think they have the answer to. Boston might be a little bit different story because they played the ideal playoff game against them in Boston. They came up short. So to your question, I really don't think – I think Simmonds has probably seen his last piece of ice till the end of the year.
Mike, where do we see O'Reilly? Where's Sheldon Keefe going to line him up, or could he could Keefe change his strategy as circumstances develop?
Well, first off, I think you have to back up and take a look at the overall picture of the Toronto Maple Leafs. The way they've been constructed this year is to set up for the playoffs. The bottom six they have currently is probably the best bottom six the team has ever had. But the key to the whole thing, believe it or not, in the top 12 forwards is number 88. You know, I've talked about him in the past, but his play is diminishing play the last month when the play has gotten tougher, the games have gotten harder, more aggressive, has been a big sore spot for the Maple Leafs. And because, I mean, how many 80-point players do you see playing in a game against the number one team in the league, tied game with 5 minutes of play, and he gets benched? He's been taken off the power play for a reason, because of his soft play in the corners. He won't go near a puck or any physical play whatsoever. And I love nothing better than have him prove me wrong. But the critical part is this has hurt John Tavares, whose play has also gone downhill as a result. So they've had to move Raleigh into that spot. ideally, if Nylander would step up a play a bit and play a little more aggressive, I don't know if he will or not, that gives you the fact your number one line would be, you know, puts Janmark with Bunting and Matthews, and you have the opportunity to move Marner in there occasionally. Tavares could play with Marner and keep him scoring. Then you put Riley with Achari and Lafferty, which gives at least probably the best third line they've ever had. And that fourth line, David Kempf is playing the best hockey of his career. I mean, the game he played against Boston that night was outstanding. And Austin Reitz's game is elevated to another level for the playoffs as the season's moved along. And Kerfoot's Mr. Reliable all along. So if you go back and look at it all, the key that out of whole top forward lines for the Toronto Maple Leafs is number 88. And how he goes is how Keith will adjust his lineup. And you can just see the way he's been playing in the last little while. He's trying to slap him across the head to tell him to wake up. And he better wake up pretty quickly. And if he does, some good things could happen for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, he's certainly, at points in this season, he's especially in the overtimes, he scored some highlights.
Well, there's no hitting.
It's
river hockey.
Yeah.
Right? So there's no hitting.
Yeah, it's unbelievable,
so
his skill level.
There's no 3-on-3 in the playoffs.
Lou, let's take a look at the Leaf defense. Who do you foresee? I mean, Riley and Brody are obvious. But after that, who's going to be... who's Keith going to? Is he going 6D? Is he going 7D? And who's going to be there?
I don't think Liljegren's going to be. He's going to be the odd man out right now. They've just got too much going for them in other areas. They've got 9, so you're looking at probably Gustafsson and Liljegren are probably going to be the odd 2 guys out. Only because of who they're playing. Maybe against other teams they might change it up right now, but I can't see anybody removing the 6 guys that they have right now, just because of the physicality of the playoffs. And Mike, you made a great point regarding Nylander. I look at the key as Mitch Marner, because Mitch really hasn't done much in the playoffs the last couple of years, and Nylander has stepped it up in the playoffs. So it's going to be a switch there. But I tell you, if they're going to be going on all cylinders, this Leaf team is going to be a tough Leaf team to beat, because they are they got a lot of depth, and their players even on the third and fourth line, short against Boston the other night, that are ready for the playoffs. Now the playoffs are going to be a different story.
Naz, who do you see? Any surprises on defense in terms of who you anticipate is going to be there? And in terms of Keith's strategy, do you think he's going to mix and match defensemen as the series progresses?
I think he's pretty well set on his D right now, and I don't think any changes are right. McCabe is going to be really good in the playoffs because he's tough, he's physical, and he has an offensive threat to him too. So should be good. But I think the key in the whole series is John Tavares, boys. And O'Reilly gets Tavares going, it's going to be pretty good.
Mike, defense-wise, I would assume we're going to see Giordano. Are we going to see Luke Shen and Justin Hall?
Well, you're going to see. He's a big fan of Justin Hall, and Justin Hall is good on the penalty kill. And you saw the way he played against Boston the other night. You know, everybody, he's the new Larry Murphy of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He gets picked on so much for the stuff he does, but I'll tell you, he took a hit there in overtime where he sacrificed his body to get a puck out, and then he made a huge block just before Pasternak scored. So, you know, you got to give this guy some credit. He's been picking his game up a little bit. Luke Shen plays the type of physical game that Toronto's been lacking, and behind their blue line, I think he gives them that added edge, and especially against Tampa with the way their floors swing around, it gives them that little added edge. I mean, he's got the experience to play back there. You know what? I don't see him coming out of lineup. I think he's been brought in for a reason, and the reason is to get through that first round.
Gentlemen, we're down to the proverbial short strokes. We're going to see. I think we're going to see Sheldon Keefe slowly edge towards his starting lineup as this week progresses, and should be fascinating. Obviously, we're going to have a special show next Sunday, our playoff special. Before we go, Naz, really quickly, and I'll run it around the horn. Edmonton Oilers, man, watch out. They seem to be peaking at the right time.
Yeah, they have the top six forwards for sure, and they're very tough on the road now too. So look out, it could be Toronto-Edmonton final. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be incredible. Lou, Oilers. If they since they went away from Jack Campbell and since they brought in Ekholm and Kane's taken his game up to where it should be, they look pretty tough, Lou.
They really do. Obviously, when you got McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Kane, and the other, let's not forget Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah, over 100 points this year, Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah, they're going to be like the old Edmonton Oilers. The thing is, do they have a grand cure in between the pipes? That's going to be their big question. Their defense will get by, but if their goaltenders play as they have in the past, I don't think they will. But again, time will tell. We'll see if Skinner is going to be the right guy.
On that note, Mike, we'll thank you for joining us. And obviously, we're into the playoffs, so we'll stay in touch. Lou, thank you. Lou, you're going to hang around with us for the next segment. Mike, we'll let you go. We'll go back to Augusta. We were there earlier with James Duthie. We're going back to Augusta right after the break. We'll be right back.
No hard crosses.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville decided to do what it could to stop world prices from spiralling out of control. With the large pickup special, get a large one-topping pizza for only $11.99. $11.99 for a large pizza?
Long live Pizzaville!
Call Pizzaville for the large pickup special at 736-3636.
Rayo's got big nose!
Or online at pizzaville.ca.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in Toronto, 96.7 FM, and we live video and audio stream on the internet, www.zoomerradio.com. .ca. It's the first day of spring. It's Masters Sunday. It's a tradition on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We're pleased to welcome back our good friend from Masters.com, senior editor, Global Golf Post, and he's at Augusta this morning, as he always is at this time of year and when we chat with him. Of course, I'm talking about our good friend, John Steinbreder. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, although it hardly feels like spring down here, I'll tell you. But I'm doing really well. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Is it warming up at all? I'm actually watching it. I got my little iPhone here. Koepka is still, I think, 13 under. John Rahm is 11 under. They're on the 10th hole, and they got another 18. So they got 27 holes. It's going to be a long day.
It is going to be a long day. It's not raining, though, which is a good thing. It was pouring yesterday, and I was 44 degrees, and I got out of my car this morning and walked into the media center. It's warmed up a little bit, but still pretty chilly, still pretty cloudy. But, you know, it's not raining. Looks like we're going to get everything in today, which is fantastic. And should be a great afternoon. I guess a great morning of golf and a great afternoon. Kepka and Rahm both just hit into number 11. They're the last group. So, you know, they should be done before too long. They're going to tee off of 1 and 10 at approximately 12:30, it looks like, for the final round, and CBS is going to cover it. It's normal times from 2 to 7 p.m., and there you go. It looks like it's all going to happen, and right now it looks like a two-person race, but we got a few people behind them that are playing well and getting close to them, so it should be a great day. Really looking forward to it.
John, how's the course playing today? It's received a lot of rain, but this is the most, probably from a drainage point of view, the most technologically advanced course in the world. They've got all kinds of underground systems there. How soggy is the course still? And I know Masters, one of the key features is always how fast the greens are. I've got to think that the rain has sort of slowed them down a little bit.
Well, it rained a lot. It rained a lot Friday afternoon and evening. It rained a ton yesterday afternoon. And it was raining last night. I got back from dinner around 9:30, quarter 10. It was raining, and I think it was raining up until 1 or 2 in the morning, at least it was supposed to. And so it is wet out there. I've just been watching a lot of, I was just noticing, watching guys playing 12 today. I've already seen 5 or 6 birdies today. Greens are very receptive to balls. And I'm watching just from the cold. I'm seeing a lot of approach shots being a little short into greens, and I just think, you know, these guys are trying to judge distances and get the distance control right in this cold and a little bit of a wind and the fact that balls aren't rolling out a ton on the greens, it seems, at the moment. So, yeah, no, I mean, nobody does a better job at, you know, preparing their courses, especially after inclement weather like this. But this is, it's not a Scottish Links. It's not sandy soil. And there's great technology here, but I think it's still, it's playing softer than normal. And certainly it'll dry out during the day as long as there's no more rain. But it's definitely a little bit softer than it normally is.
Naz?
John, I've been watching Sam Bennett, the amateur. He looks pretty good. What do you think?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We were thinking, going back to 58 with Billy Joe Patton, was the last time an amateur did so well in the Masters. And here he is. He's playing with Rahm. He's playing with Koepka. So he's, you know, with two of the big boys. And he's just, you know, 7 strokes back of Koepka and 5 right now back of Rahm, and he's, you know, he's come back a little bit. He started this round at 8 under, and now he's at 6, so he's come back a tad. God, he's impressive, and I've watched him hit a couple of chips today. I just can't believe how good his short game play is, and he's really an impressive kid to watch.
Lou,
amateurs. Sorry, Wally. What's the room on rule on amateurs collecting money?
I'm a little confused by it all right now because of what they can and can't do. But, you know, he's still an amateur. He's not going to get any prize money, certainly, in that role. He's wearing a pretty prominent logo from, Johnny O and on his white vest, which you've seen a lot of vests and outfits like that as you're given the cold. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, too, because he's eligible to play in the U.S. Open this year, I believe also the Open Championship, and I think he's got to remain an amateur in order to do so, and certainly with his strong finish here, he can, you know, he'll earn an invitation to come back here next year, and I'm sure by that time, that's indeed what happens. He's going to be well into his pro career because he's really showed that he belongs at the way he's played out here.
Lou?
John, watching these guys hit the ball this morning, how much different is it going to be later on in the afternoon? And how many more adjustments do they have to make between playing this morning and playing this afternoon, especially on this golf course that you can really see the difference sometimes, like it was on Thursday or Friday where the tree was blown over. And if you're playing from the top of the hill, you can really see the wind. And then at the bottom of the hill, there wasn't really any wind at all.
Yeah, I think it's going to change. It's going to warm up. So they're talking about, you know, highs in below 60. So that'll certainly help. The course will continue to dry out, so that's going to certainly help a little bit too. I can even see the skies. I'm talking to you from the press building right now, and the sky's brightening a little bit. All that is going to help. I'm seeing a little movement in the trees. I think there's some breeze out there, but nothing like it was the other day. So I just think conditions are going to improve.
We're talking.
It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be 85 degrees and still, but it'll certainly be easier than it has been.
We're talking to John Steinbrenner from Masters.com. John, you wrote an article on Friday at Masters.com. A healthy Koepka shows he still has game. Brooks, you know, watching that HBO series Full Swing seemed a little bit off, but he certainly, from last week, winning the tournament down in Orlando, I think it was, he's on the LIV Golf Tour, he seems to have his swagger back this week. When he was between 2017 and 2019, he was the best player in the world, won four majors. He was a tough nut to crack. It looks like the old Brooks is back this week. John?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you, and it sort of surprised me a little bit. I guess like a lot of people, I'm not tuning into CW Network and watching LIV Golf.
Many of us are, but go ahead.
And it just hasn't been, you know, a lot of connection with what's been going on in his life. And in doing this piece the other day and listening to him twice in press conferences and talking after his rounds, I mean, you know, I didn't appreciate, which is reading my piece, I know you understand how I approached it, is, you know, I didn't realize how bad things were for him. And I didn't realize, you know, how horribly injured he had his right knee was after how he had injured his left knee and his wrist was hurting them, and that he was told after surgery it was going to take him a year and a half to kind of get back to normal. So being unaware of that, I just sort of thought, well, you know, he's falling, he's breaking down, he's taking the money from Liv because he knows he's breaking down, and that's kind of the extent of it. And it's amazing, you know, it had been 18 months in January, and right on schedule, according to his doctors and what they were telling him, he started to feel better and feel good for the first time in a really, really long time. And he does have his swagger back, and I think it's because he can move, he can do stuff with his body that he couldn't do the last year and a half, and he seems really happy and really good and kind of willing and able to talk about himself and his situation. So I really enjoy chatting with him and kind of found a lot of new respect for the guy. And I know we're not supposed to cheer for somebody, but it's hard not to cheer for him a little bit given what he's been through and how he's playing right now. He really is playing well. And I saw him give a little fist pump earlier today when he made a brilliant par on the 10th green. But other than that, it's just he makes a putt. He kind of waves at the crowd very subtly and then moves on in that sort of quiet. I described him in my piece as strong and stoic, and that's how he really is. And he's going to be hard to unseat from the top of the leaderboard. He's really playing well.
Naz?
How close were you to the two pine trees that went down?
Geez, I was not. Fortunately, I was up by the clubhouse actually talking to somebody. But yesterday I was chatting with Larry Mize when he and Sandy Lyle finished up their Masters career and kind of finished up together. It was pretty cool. Sandy greeted him on the green when Larry came in. Sandy just finished up, and they hugged out there, and it was really nice. Nice ceremony, nice gesture by the patrons, and good gesture by Sandy to come out and walk off together with him. But Larry afterwards was talking about he had been on 16 green hitting out of the bunker when those trees went down, and he said it was terrifying. He said the sound that they made was just unbelievable. There are people, you know, nearby, and it's pretty bad. Those are, you know, three big trees, and it's a miracle, I think, that nobody got hurt.
It absolutely was a miracle. John, you may remember this Outpost Club story. We had a tournament back at Lost Dunes in Michigan back about 10 years ago. And when I saw those trees come down and with all the people there, I just had a chill go. I was actually at a golf course one time when a tree did come down and somebody got killed. And I won't get into the details of it, but there's nothing the people on site could do because they couldn't lift the tree. So when I saw it literally was a miracle with all those people there. And apparently there was one spectator that the trees fell she was right in the middle of those trees and just and didn't get hurt. So that literally was an Easter miracle, and thank God nobody got hurt.
And I know Augusta does, you know, they go every year, and I know this just because I've been down here before in, like, you know, March or something before the tournament. I mean, they've got, you know, tree surgeons and tree people all over the property prior to the Masters, just making sure there's no, you know, checking all the trees, making sure there's no limbs that look like they need, you know, they could fall off, making sure the trees are healthy, taking care of everything and anything they can to ensure the safety of the patrons. But, you know, those winds are blowing, and you get these little micro sections here when you get, you know, thunderstorms like that. And, you know, pine trees are not the sturdiest trees in the world. I know this well from Connecticut, where we have a lot of white pines. And when you get a bad storm, these white pines will snap, and they'll snap kind of halfway up the tree sometimes, in not, you know, not violent sort of conditions. So, you know, it happens. It's not unusual to see it happen in a place like this before. They take every possible precaution to try to make sure it doesn't happen, and it's just a fluke thing that occurred. And again, thank God nobody got hurt.
John, I'm going to follow up on a question that Naz posed earlier in the show. Phil Mickelson, are you surprised? I mean, he's sort of, for lack of a better term, I guess, not talking all that much this week, which must be difficult for Phil. But he brought his game this week. So your thoughts on Phil?
Well, I will. And just real quick before we go on, I just as I'm talking to you, I just saw Ben at the Amateur put up.
Yeah, I saw that as well. I'm watching it.
On 12.
He stiffed it on 12, yeah.
But anyway, you know, I wrote Phil yesterday, and he was just playing really well. Of course, as soon as I started, as soon as I wrote the piece, he bogeyed two holes. So now he's fallen back to two under. So he's not really much of a factor. But he's been playing well. He says he feels great about his game. He's you know, somewhat chatty, but pretty circumspect. I think he's been humble. I think, you know, who knows what's going on in his head. I think it's been a very tough. You know, I wrote a lot about what's happened to him since he won the PGA in 2021, and it's not been a great, you know, time for him in many ways. And, you know, I mean, who knows what he's thinking sometimes. He's so hard to read, and he is quieter. They said he was very quiet at the Champions Dinner, you know. And I think a lot of people around here are just, you know, you don't see the outpouring of warmth toward him that, you know, you usually saw, because I think a lot of people are sort of, I don't know, golf fans. And they're entitled to their opinions. We're crazy about some of the things he said and some of the stories about him and the way he acts or has acted about stuff. But he seems circumspect, somewhat humbled, maybe a little embarrassed. I mean, who knows? But certainly the fans seem to be a little more reserved about him than they were, because I just, you're not seeing and feeling the love for Phil around here that you usually did.
We've got about 3 minutes left. Lou, last go around with John.
John, does Tiger look as old in person as he does on TV?
He just looks, you know, and again, I'm just focusing on how he's walking. He looks so stiff and so sore yesterday. It kind of breaks your heart. It really does. He's trying very hard. The conditions are just brutal. And to see him walk up 17 yesterday with that foot of his, that leg, in limping as it was cold, it was wet. I just, you felt for him. Great effort making the cut, and making the cut on the number. But, you know, it just tells you how far the muddy have fallen when that's what we're applauding is his making a consecutive cut. And you just feel bad for the guy. But physically, he just, this golf course and having to walk it in that weather and those conditions, I mean, it's just impossible for him, and I just felt terrible for him just looking at it. He looks old, he looks broken down, and you can't imagine him really ever being a factor again in a tournament. It's just, there's just too much damage on those, on that leg of his and on his back, and I mean, it's got to be brutal.
John, Koepka's 13 under, Rahm's 11 under, and the other guys on the leaderboard are Bennett, Cantlay, and Matsuyama. What do you foresee happening over the course of the rest of today?
Well, Matsuyama and Cantlay have both been playing very well today so far. Obviously, Matsuyama knows how to win here. He started the day, you know, three under, and then, you know, bogeyed the first hole, then double bogeyed yesterday. I'm sorry, this is going on, you know, double bogey number two, and he's come back nicely today. He's really playing well right now, and he's hard to count out. It's just always a question of whether Koepka comes back a little bit. I think he's about to probably bogey 12, so he'll be back to 12 under if he does indeed do that. And, you know, Cantlay's just been playing great today. I've watched him hit about three or four shots really stiff right now. So those guys are really good to see. And you can see them in the mix. Victor Hovland has come back up a little bit too. And I don't know. You know, there's five or six guys like that I think could you know, make them think a little bit at the top of the leaderboard. But it's still pretty much right now a two-man thing between Koepka and Rahm. And what a great final pairing that's going to be. That'll be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an exciting afternoon of golf. One of the top guys on the PGA Tour against one of the top guys on the LIV Golf Tour. That may end up becoming the storyline. John, I can't thank you enough. It's great that we've managed to maintain this tradition on Masters Sunday, on Major Championship Sunday. I guess we'll talk to you again soon. The U.S. Open is coming up, and maybe we'll get you back on the Canadian Open Sunday as well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, listen, thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure and a tradition like none other. So let's keep it going.
Let's keep it going as long as we possibly can. Thanks so much, John.
All right, my friend. Take care. Cheers.
Lou, thanks for joining us. Naz, last word before we go.
One more week to the playoffs.
Next Sunday should be fun. NHL playoff special. We'll be to all our loyal listeners. Thank you so much. We'll be back again next Sunday morning. Thank you.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.